Support for Essential Tremors comes from the Big Ears Festival, bigearsfestival.org.
This episode is brought to you by Atomic Books. Atomic is an independent bookstore full of objects made of paper, vinyl, plastic, and various other actual materials at the edge of time. Specializing in literary comics, small press, art books, and great regional beer at 8 Bar in the back of the store. Come to 3620 Falls Road in Hamden or go to atomicbooks.com. Atomic Books, literary finds for mutated minds.
Ever since I met Sharon and my wife and known her family, that I've been introduced to all of this music. Her dad's from Iraq, her mum's Egyptian, and they were just, and we used to go and visit her grandmother, who'd be watching Arabic films all day, and the music would always be wonderful. And so that was a really strong memory from 30 years ago of just watching this, you know, battered old cathode ray TV with all the colours were broken on it, and this passionate Arabic music backing these films. So that was the real way in, I suppose.
This is Essential Tremors.
I'm Lee Gardner.
I'm Matt Byers.
The idea behind this show is to have musicians and other creators talk about songs that shaped who they are. We're not looking for favorite songs, necessarily. We're also not looking for songs that they'd choose to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What we're looking for are songs that have significance to them. Songs that might have changed the course of their creative lives, or their lives in general.
A dreamer to put the world to rights. I stay home forever. We're tuned to always makes a fire.
Johnny Greenwood is a guitarist and multi-instrumentalist for acclaimed bands Radiohead and The Smile, as well as a writer of scores for highly regarded films such as Paul Thomas Anderson's There Will Be Blood and Phantom Thread, the latter of which earned him an Academy Award nomination. Since Radiohead's emergence in the early 1990s, Greenwood's endlessly creative but economical, thoughtful playing and composing have made a profound impact on modern music in multiple genres. His newest work is a collaboration with Dudu Tasa, titled Jirak Karabakh, which translates as Your Neighbor is Your Friend, and uses a variety of guest singers to produce new arrangements of songs from Jordan, Algeria, Egypt, and Morocco.
The first song Greenwood chose as being formative for him was Ululu by Abdel Halim Hafez.
This song, Ululu, was a big deal for me because it's the first Arab song that I played to myself over and over again. Just fascinated at how ambiguous the rhythm is at the start, which I always love in a song. There's a XTC song that does the same kind of thing. They often used to do that, where you're not sure where the first beat of the bar is. And it goes from that to this building crescendo of percussion and passion. I mean, like lots of Arab music, it's so emotive and so full of excitement. And I just, for some reason, that I don't know why that was a surprise to me, that this music would be so romantic and so full of, you know, yearning and lost love. That seems to be the most common subject in these songs. And yeah, that's what led me to this fascination with music like this.
What XTC song was it that it reminded you of?
I think it's a song called Millions on Drums and Wires, which again just starts up and you think you know where the one is, and then the song starts properly and you've been totally led down, you know, the wrong track.
So you're sort of off balance from the get-go.
For sure, and that's certainly true of this song, Alulu.
That makes me sort of flash on your session from the Basement series, the Nigel Godrich thing you've done for a couple records, and the beginning of Bloom from the King of Limbs. One, I mean, I always feel very off balance with the beginning of that in a really interesting and cool way.
Yeah, well, with Radiohead, it's even during rehearsals, we would often have very friendly arguments about where the one actually is, and we're all hearing it in different places. So it's crazy how that happens. In fact, I think Tom did one tour with Flea playing bass for him on one track, and Flea just couldn't hear it in the same place as everyone else and played the whole tour hearing the song in a different place. So I don't know how you can do that. It's kind of seems mad to me.
So how old were you when you heard this song?
Probably 20-25 years ago. I mean, ever since I met Sharon and my wife and known her family, that I've been introduced to all of this music. Her dad's from Iraq, her mum's Egyptian, and we used to go and visit her grandmother, who'd be watching Arabic films all day, and the music would always be wonderful. And so that was a really strong memory from 30 years ago of just watching this, you know, battered old cathode ray TV with all the colours were broken on it, and this really passionate Arabic music backing these films. So that was the real way in, I suppose.
So would you say this was sort of tied into your experience of getting to know your wife's family and entering that relationship as well?
Yeah, for sure. And it was just my favourite thing to do was go to the markets and trawl through looking for vinyl and CDs back then. And just these names that were just so mysterious, and slowly learning about that. It's like, you know, it's like any passion. You take a thread and it leads you to all these other things and other countries. And I mean, it's like Indian music. It's just a whole universe in itself. Arabic music, or African music. It's limitless. It reminds me, I've got a friend who just listens to reggae music, and I can completely understand why you would do that, because again, there's just enough of it. There's no need to hear anything else. And it's, you know, it's daunting and exciting in equal measure.
We often ask this question of guests, and I always sort of qualify it by saying that I know that if something is a formative sound or song for you, it doesn't mean it's necessarily going to turn up in the next thing you create. But often it comes out sort of in subliminal ways or just appears in subtle ways later. So I guess I will ask you that with that qualification. How did this appear in your own work, or did it, after you were exposed to it?
Yeah, it for sure did. I mean, we listened to this kind of percussion a lot with Radiohead, but also for this new record with Dudu Tasa, just because one of the frustrations we felt with how Arabic music is typically updated or westernized or whatever gruesome word you use, what often happens is just a four to the floor kick drum is put on and it becomes a sort of this banging techno thing. Whereas what we loved about things like Alulu is the subtlety of the drums. It's crazy. Quite often it's literally just a tambourine or a tambourine and a side drum, and that's all that's happening. But so many textures and delicacy and aggression and everything. It can be got out of these things, and that just always feels like it's just been oversimplified or watered down. So we wanted to have that complexity but still use, you know, slightly more contemporary sounds and approaches. So that was the kind of the nice problem we had going into this in terms of the rhythms of the songs.
The second piece of music Greenwood chose as essential to forming his sensibilities was Home Computer by Kraftwerk.
Yeah, so we were just talking about percussion and Arabic percussion versus kind of contemporary electronic music's sort of default position of four to the floor kick drums. And one of the references we talked about was Kraftwerk and how they managed to make their rhythms sound strangely delicate and not in any way brutal or... and. So that led us into building drum machines with modular synthesizers and avoiding any kind of computer sequencing. So there was lots of, you know, 1970s, 80s era technology used for the rhythms, just because we wanted to refer to the subtleties and complexities of the original songs. I mean, all of these songs on this record are cover versions, so... We were hearing these subtleties and wanting to, you know, to put them across.
It's interesting you bring up Kraftwerk. I mean, it's well documented, you know, what the lore says, what they were coming from contextually or where they were coming from regarding German culture at the time. And they were sort of this reaction to, you know, extreme industrialization or technocracy or whatever you want to call it, and this sort of dehumanization. Seemingly of people due to technology or whatever, and how it sort of created who they became. But that's an interesting point you bring up about the humanity of this coming through at the same time, because they were going almost for something opposite, I think almost ironically. But I wondered if you could see overlaps with certain things that you all have done, you've done in your own work, that would follow sometimes a similar path.
Yeah, I think Kraftwerk's music is full of humanity. I mean, however hard they tried to fight against that. I remember them saying they want their idea of a perfect concert is to cycle to the top of a mountain and press a button and have some remote animatronic perform their music for them. But, I mean, even just harmonically, it's all so colourful and strangely euphoric and joyful, you know, while being cold and robotic. It's interesting, isn't it? It's a nice set of contradictions. And yeah, and it was just a big reference for this. I mean, we kept saying, what if Kraftwerk moved to Cairo in the 70s and carried on? What would they, you know? And that was, I quite like that stuff as well, where you look at, this is very niche, but there's that trend among some people to imagine technology coming out in a different era. So they will make packaging for the Rubik's Cube that looks like from the 1960s, as though it had been invented then. And that playing around with time I find really interesting and appealing, you know. Or reimagining some contemporary computer game for the, you know, Nintendo Game Boy and all that stuff. It's very, and I think musically that's something I think about quite often as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, changing the context for any sort of thing can be, you know, fascinating. Just the backdrop changes the entire color of what's in the foreground. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's about, it's imagining what would historically have happened if these two things had taken place. You know, it's Man in the High Castle, I suppose, isn't it? It's that sort of thinking, but hopefully a bit more cheerful.
So how old were you when you first heard this, when you first heard Kraftwerk?
Probably hearing the model when I was at school, which was late 80s, mid 80s, wasn't it? And I was still at school. And then this particular album just became very important in the 90s while we were working with Radiohead. Was just a constant reference for how to make things, you know, electronic and beautiful at the same time.
Starting at which record do you think that was? Was it from the onset, from like Pablo Honey, or was it later on?
Probably from the Bends onwards, yeah, after the Bends.
That's what I would have guessed, actually. Mm-hmm. Yes, really audible there for sure. This episode is brought to you by Royal Books, located at 32 West 25th Street in Charles Village here in Baltimore. Established in 1996, Royal Books is a seller of rare books and paper specializing in literature, cinema, music, and the arts. From Cassavetes to Ida Lupino, from New Wave to Warhol, you will find an ever-expanding selection of first editions, original film scripts, vintage photographs, posters, and 20th century Americana. Visit us online at royalbooks.com or visit our store on any weekday between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Beyond Video is a volunteer-run video library in Baltimore. Basically, an old-school video rental store reimagined with a 21st-century nonprofit twist. Beyond offers nearly 30,000 titles from every region, era, and genre of cinema on DVD, Blu-ray, and VHS. A collection put together by crowdsourcing disc donations from movie lovers like you. With no rental fees or late fees, members get unlimited rentals from the collection for a small monthly donation. Find out more about joining or donating at beyondvideo.org, or when in Baltimore, visit Beyond at 2545 North Howard Street. And for a limited time, new members who mention Essential Tremors when signing up will get an extra month for free. The final piece of music Greenwood chose as being crucial to him was Asiba Wal Jamal by Muhammad Abdel Wahab.
Well, I think the thing to say about it really is that it shows how long the whole East-West cross-fertilization has been going on. I mean, this song is from the 50s and it's full of piano and references to, you know, Western film music. So this was something we thought about a lot in terms of how respectful we had to be to the original, and the answer being, to a degree, we shouldn't be, because, you know, I mean, the most famous song in the West in terms of Arabic music is probably Umm Kulthum's Enter Omri, and that has electric guitar on it, for example. So this kind of thing has been going on for at least 50-60 years, so we were conscious that we weren't that necessarily doing anything that groundbreaking, and also encouraged us to not be, you know, overly deferential to something recorded in the 30s and to be happy to put electronic sounds onto it and arrange it in a different way. It was a balance to get right, but I think in the end we made it.
What was sort of the essence of the song that you wanted to keep intact?
Well, this song is so beautifully sung. and you can hear the tension in it between the Western harmony of the piano and then the second section, which has more quarter tones and more, you know, authentic Arabic scales in it, which again is another big problem when you're trying to impose chords onto music, which is melodically using notes that are, you know, between the notes. And major and minor chords don't mean anything. In fact, the canoon player was telling me that I was talking to the canoon player on this record, this amazing guy called Ariel, and he was saying, talking about these scales, and I told him that there's an Indian scale, a rag, where the fifth note of the scale is ever so slightly flat. And to a Westerner, that's the most bizarre thing, because all Western music is about the first and the fifth, and they're like pillars that you don't move around. And the idea that every time that note is heard, it has to be played slightly flat is so strange to Western. And he said, and then Ariel, the canoon player, told me that there's an Arabic scale where the octave, when you reach it, you don't play it in tune. You have to play it slightly flat, which is even strange. So finding that kind of thing is really exciting to me. And that is something we have to work out and be respectful for, because sometimes when you impose chords on these kind of melodies, it just makes the melody collapse, or it forces into one of two places, and you lose any ambiguity, or you lose any of the sort of fluidity of it. So yeah, that was kind of interesting. So occasionally Duda would say, no chords here, can't have chords, you're just going to smash it. And elsewhere, chords work, you know, as in, you know, Alulu and the, you know, the Arabic songs you've just played.
As a musician, you know, if you bring in or introduce sort of new modalities or equipment or whatever, effects pedals, etc., it can be really liberating, of course, and create entirely new ideas that sort of, again, liberate you from your standard way of thinking. Did that happen for you here, not being able to play standard chords, but also any other elements that allowed things to open up for you in a different way?
I think it was more the liberation of realizing that whole sections of the songs just sounded good already. They didn't need me interfering with my, you know, sub James Brown bass lines and whatever else I was trying to impose on them. And it's also why I suppose I gravitated more and more towards building machines to make percussion, and did more of the rhythm work in a way than necessarily the chords and other stuff.
Yeah, staying out of the way is sort of underrated, unfortunately.
I think so, yeah. I totally agree. And I think, you know, effects and things like that can be overrated. In the last few years, I've just gone back to just having a delay pedal, and it's a whole universe. That feels enough, really, and I'm already, you know, still haven't had enough of it. So yeah, it's good to get back to some sort of simplicity and explore something properly. You get the feeling that sometimes the rate of discovery and exploration is so fast that people forget how wonderful some of these very simple ideas are, and how many there are still things to be done. So you know, it's a good feeling. It's a good thing.
This has been Essential Tremors. Essential Tremors is produced by me, Matt Byers, and Lee Gardner. Essential Tremors is distributed by WYPR Baltimore. For more information about Essential Tremors, go to essentialpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. على